Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lorne, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lorne. I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me playing the Adventurous and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about the Druids.
Now, before we get started, we want to say that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
So, Luis,
yes.
I've come to the conclusion that anyone who's trained in survival can probably live in the woods. Like, that's not really a problem. But they will never thrive there the way a druid will, right?
Yeah.
Because the birches and the bears don't just obey the druid's commands. They happily assist their woodsy friend, right? These champions of the world's places, they embody everything powerful about nature. They bear arms. They arm bears. Sometimes they have bear arms. And they use these three to take down threats to their home. In Pathfinder, the druid is truly one of the most jack-of-all-trades classes. Because you can build a druid for tank, support, DPS, healing. If you can name a thing that the party needs done, the druid can probably do it. There's nothing this class can't do, and your primal spell list is every bit the same.
Yeah, druid is one of those classes that's in a weird spot, and I think has been for the history of the game, in that there's no one thing that, like, yes, this is the druid's thing. Like you said, it's a jack of all trades, and very much feels like it came in after the very important niches were filled. Okay, we need a defensible person, we need a fighting person, we need a sneaky person, we need a skilled person. All right, we got all of those covered. Now what themes and ideas can we put in there? Nature's cool. Let's make a druid. And then the druid is born, or reincarnated, or whatever you want to say.
I think that examples from popular culture are kind of tough for the druid, but that's not because you don't see a lot of druids in pop culture. I think it's quite the opposite. They're so ubiquitous that they're never really given leading roles. Like, constantly the fantasy hero will go out to the creepy old lady who lives in the woods for advice or some potion or something. That little old lady's probably a druid. Maybe even like a druid with a witch archetype, you know? That's like half of fantasy movies have that. But they never really give them like a name. They don't really flesh out their character. So it's hard to come up with good examples. But I do have three, okay? I think it's obvious that Poison Ivy was a plant-based druid, right? There's no getting around that. Radagast from Lord of the Rings. He lived in the woods, and he did, you know, nature-y spells. Like, if you do those two things, I'm letting you wear the little uniform that says, "Hi, I'm a druid. Ask me for help with trees." I think that, and I'm going to go way back into pop culture, right? We're talking way back. I think that the Arthurian Lady of the Lake was probably a druid, you know. Or maybe a Nereid or something. But those are often druids. So, I mean, it still works.
Yeah. And I think what you're talking about with witches and the like happens a lot is anyone that could be seen as a witch in fantasy in pop culture, you could probably make a very strong argument. They're like, nah, they're probably a druid instead. And it just so happens to be the word witch kind of sticks to people a lot better than druid does. So, there you go.
Now, Luis, I've got you this time. I've got you, my friend. There's no way the druid can fit the Batman test.
I think this is the hardest one yet, I feel. Well, here's one thing that I will say, and you're going to hear me say it again with all the other spellcasters, in that druid, or the the utility belt that Batman has could be seen as spell slots and spells. He always has something prepared and can swap them in and out as he needs based on the particular tasks that he's going on. If he's going to go fight the Joker, he has probably specific things in his belt compared to other stuff when he goes fight the Penguin and the like. So, you know, spellcasters easily mapped to Batman all the time, but let's make him a druid specifically.
I'm not buying it.
Yeah,
I'm not
I know. Let's make him a druid specifically. Druids are known to have animal companions, aren't they?
Oh my god.
So, one could argue that Batman's companions, like Robin, could be seen. Robin is a type of animal, or if we want to get more specific with like actual animals, Ace the Bat Hound is a common friend of Batman's.
And Ace the Bat Hound?
Yes. Ace the Bat Hound is Bruce Wayne's companion, and thus Batman's companion. And, you know, Ace is an animal companion. He's a druid. Could also argue he's a ranger, but there you go. And then, you know, he happens to know a lot about plants and animals because he's a very smart guy. And he, you know, if you throw Batman out into nature, I'm sure he would thrive more so than someone just trained in survival. So he's got the inklings of druidism. He just happens.
You have convinced me thoroughly that Batman is a ranger.
He's an urban druid.
Now that's an interesting spin on it. No, I still can't buy it. He's never picked up a rat and said, "Hey there, little buddy, where did those criminals go?"
Sure, whatever. But there you go. I attempted the Batman test with the druid.
All right.
You know what? Lauren, I'm just tired of you constantly subjecting me to these tests, and maybe it's time that you do some tests too.
Oh, no.
I feel like you're always making Vikings, and rather than always have a Viking build, we're just going to put you up front right now and say, how can you make a druid into a Viking? And then you give us a different class build. So what's the Viking test? Give us your Viking druid.
Jeez, folks, you're straight up calling me out here. Look, this is too easy. Although, in all honesty, every class is too easy to make into a Viking, right? Who did Ragnar Lothbrok go to understand the divine wisdom of Odin? He goes to his shaman. He goes to his druid. And she says, "Drink these holly berries to commune with the gods." You know? Look, the druid is the village's shaman that you have to go out into the woods and you have to do mushrooms with to understand your spiritual wisdom. Right? It's a one-to-one, like, translation to Pathfinder from Viking culture, you know? And on top of that, I don't like that you're calling me out because you're right. I almost made another Viking build for this, but I didn't want to go with the shaman because I thought it was too on the nose. I almost made the prototypical berserker from history, but the way that they claim to be. So I almost made, like, a shifter druid that flies into rage with, like, the berserker archetype and hits things with a great axe. I thought that would have been really cool, but I didn't do it. I didn't do it for once. I didn't make a Viking.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. But how would our listeners make a druid in Pathfinder?
Well, I don't know. Let's look at the different class features and proficiencies. Druids are a class who has one key ability score. That score is wisdom. They know a lot about what's going on around them and are very in tune with the world around them. And they get 8 plus their constitution modifier number of hit points every level and begin trained in perception.
You've also got training in fortitude and reflex. Nothing special there. Expert in will. You're not easy to spook. You're trained in nature automatically. Kind of makes sense. You're trained in one skill determined by your druidic order, which we will soon talk about, and you're trained in a number of additional skills equal to 2 plus your intelligence. Not great, not the worst. Additionally, you're going to be trained in simple weapons, so clubs and sticks, and you're going to be trained in unarmed attacks. So you can use your hands, or you can use your paws, if that be your preference.
Defense-wise, you are trained in light armor, medium armor, and unarmored defense. And finally, you are trained in a little thing called primal spell attacks and primal spell DCs. Going on from there, you start off with primal spell casting, which ties into your being trained with spell attacks and spell DCs. Druids cast from the primal spell list, get 5 cantrips, plus a bunch of spells throughout the day. If you want to know more about primal spells, we talked about them a while back, but just know that they're mostly all the nature-themed spells that are really good at calling animal friends and calling plant friends and blowing things up with volcanoes and lightning bolts.
You're going to get the druidic language automatically added to your character. It's a language that only you and other druids know about. It's like the secret handshake for people who like leaves. In addition to that, you're going to have an anathema, or a few things that are anathema to your character. Now, your order is going to give you a few more things too, depending on which order you pick, but there's a few general anathemas to all druids. Okay? Don't wear metal armor or shields. Specifically metal shields. A wooden shield would be just fine. Notice though how this doesn't say don't use metal weapons. I guess because it's just not feasible to imagine people can't run around without metal weapons. Do not despoil natural places. And do not teach the druidic language to non-druids. But I wonder, Luis, I feel like the druid archetype is good enough. You could teach it to someone who's got the druid archetype, because they're technically part of an order, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they have... Yeah, I would say that counts as being a druid. If you think about it in previous edition terms, they just multi-class and have a level of druid, and that counts.
That counts. All right. Tell me about the orders, though, Luis.
All right. When you become a druid, you align yourself with a specific order, which kind of represents the things that you focus on, helping out with defending, protecting, your powers... For your druid. So you might have, for example, the animal order, where you have a strong connection to animals, and you gain an animal companion, you become trained in athletics, and you gain the heal animal focus spell. And specifically, anathema-wise, if you end up committing wanton cruelty to animals or killing animals unnecessarily, that is bad. Anathema! But you can still defend yourself from attacking animals and, you know, being... mindful when killing an animal for food.
If you're a leaf order druid, you really like plants, you know? Like, carrots they make you happy, right? You want to protect them. You're going to be trained in diplomacy. You're going to get a leshy familiar as a druid feat. And you're going to gain the good berry order spell. A classic spell, but now you can do it every 10 minutes. The anathema as a plant druid is being cruel or killing plants unnecessarily. Don't go stomping on the holly bush just because you pricked yourself.
You could also be a member of the Storm Order. You carry the power of storms within you. You become trained in acrobatics, gain the Stormborn druid feat, and gain the Tempest Surge order spell to cast as a focus spell. If you follow the Storm Order, anathema includes polluting the air or allowing those who cause major air pollution or climate shifts to go unpunished. You have to protect the skies.
And finally, we have the Wild Order Druid. These are the druids that shapeshift into stuff. They have an uncontrollable call of the natural world. The only thing anathema to them, in addition to the general things, is becoming domesticated by civilization. You're a wild child. So don't get tame.
Yeah, don't get tied down.
Don't get tied down. Do get trained in intimidation, though. That'd be all right. Do get the Wild Morph Order spell, which isn't going to turn you into a bear, like, at level 1, but it might give you, like, some furry hands that you can use to scrape people. Now, Luis, let me tell you. This is the first edition where I actually like druids.
Yeah.
it's true. It's because in all past editions, I could never make a character that I thought conceptually made sense, right? Like, they, I don't like shapeshifting as a druid. I don't like it. I'm not a fan. But, like, you always had that on the table. Like, it was rare that you found a variant that was worth a damn that didn't focus on shapeshifting.
Yeah.
And everybody would be like, well, just don't use it. That's not how this works, right? Like, there is math involved that if you don't use a core feature of your class, you're a liability to your party. So the fact that here in second edition, they kind of have all of these different concepts split out so that you can then focus on them and make them even stronger is so cool. And I love, love, love that at second level, you can take Order Explorer to pick up a whole second order and go down its feat tree also. So if you liked how druids could do all of those different things, you can still do that. This is why second edition is so great. You can build exactly what you want.
Yeah, I feel like I saw a lot of druids over my 1E career just end up becoming the same general druidy blob that, like, expands into all five different things a druid can always do. It's like, well, I'm going to start trying to do this, but it's like, I guess I should also focus more on my spellcasting, and now I should focus more on my wild shape and an animal companion, and then everyone ends up being the same kind of druid in the end. So yes, this helps a lot with making every druid a bit more unique and distinct. Other than picking your order, you at first level pick up shield block, which lets you block with a shield. Great job, druids. You're as strong as fighters and champions. You also pick up wild empathy, which allows you to use diplomacy to make impressions on animals and requests of them. And eventually, you know, you get better at your saves, you get better at your spell casting, and come 19th level, you become the Primal Hierophant. You gain access to 10th level spells, so you can throw cataclysms at people and call upon natural miracles to change the world around you.
There are so many different ways to build a druid in second edition that I have never seen the same druid twice. Not even remotely. Like, they're all so different. Do you have yet another unique druid for me, Luis?
Oh no, I'm afraid I'm gonna end up being the first time you see a doubling up. I'm going with a very classic druid build, I feel. A very basic druid build. I'm trying my best to, at least while we're talking about the core classes, keep all the stuff constrained within the core rulebook, so no APG feats here. I know I think I cheated once or twice in the past, but all core druid...
Unlike how I keep all my stuff constrained to Norway.
Yes, there you go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a leaf order druid. We're going to be whatever ancestry we want. Humans are cool, whatever, but maybe you can be I don't know, like a leshy or something else, but it doesn't really matter. But I'm going to be a leaf order druid, so we get a familiar, which is the form of a cool leshy buddy, and we get the good berry spell, which is already kind of leaning into the idea that I have here of being kind of a focus or a support focus spellcaster. If you happen to get a first level feat, you already have the leaf order's familiar feat, so you have two options. You can have reach spell or widen spell. Both of those are pretty good. I personally am of the reach spell opinion, just because it's nicer, I feel, to get people from a distance than to make things big. At second level, our feat I'm going to take is Call of the Wild, which lets us swap out a prepared spell for something like summon animal or summon plants and fungi of the same level. So whenever you need it, if you feel the need, you can call upon an animal or a plant or some fungus to help out, and just having that versatility is nice. Fourth level doesn't have many feats that I'm really into. The Woodland Stride does very little for supporting other people, so instead I'm going to use my fourth level feat to take a second level feat, which is going to be Enhanced Familiar, which lets us give our familiar four different abilities every day rather than two, and I'll talk about the familiar in a bit here. Sixth level is Steady Spellcasting to help us cast when we're in the middle of combat and not lose our spells. Eighth level is Fey Caller to give us a bit more versatility. It gives us some illusions that we can hopefully use to support ourselves and our allies. And finally, at 10th level, I'm taking Overwhelming Energy, which when needed if I need to blast someone with a big, strong lightning bolt or something, overwhelming energy will help me overcome resistances and things like that. But I mentioned a familiar. There's a lot of a familiar's possibilities. In particular, I think there's a lot of good master abilities that we can take to help our Leshy help us help our friends. Early on, you don't have access to all of the abilities. So I would say start with something like fast movement so your familiar can run around a lot faster. Then you can take the familiar focus ability to get your focus spell, or get a focus point back once a day. When you need it, it can be really helpful if you need a good vary or whatever else you might have as a focus spell at higher levels. Spell battery, which we can't take until we have at least fourth level spells, lets us get an extra spell slot, which we can use for versatility. And finally, spell delivery, which is really the big thing we want our Leshy for, is allowing us to cast touch spells at a distance. And if your familiar happens to, you know, be able to run 80 feet in two actions because they happen to have fast movement, that's a lot better than what reach spell could get you in with just that with a familiar's power rather than just throwing it with a reach spell. So there's a lot you can do. Really, the highlight of this is focusing on good support spells. Things like heal, things like bark skin will do you well in getting people going and helping out.
So this isn't a character that folks who've been listening to Legend Lore since the beginning are unfamiliar with. I finally had the chance to bring my very first Pathfinder 2nd Edition character to you, dear listeners. This was the first character I made back in the playtest at Gen Con when somebody put a softcover book in my hand and said, "What you got, kid?" This is Ainagi Adraboro. This is my Mongolian storm shaman archer who rides a horse and shoots lightning bolts out of a bow. Like, there's a lot going on. I'm not going to call this my most elegant character, but I love it. And what's uniquely fun about it is that this is not an easy character to put in any edition except for Pathfinder 2nd Edition. I challenge any listener out there to make this character as fleshed out by level 2 as you can do it here in this system. Try it out. 5th edition, show me what you got. 1st edition, show me what you got. I want to hear it. What I did to make Ainagi is she is an ancient elf because that gives me access to ranger dedication at level 1. Her backstory is that she did live a very long time as a ranger in the plains of Tianxi. How do you say that? Is that right?
I said we call it Tianxia.
Tianxia. She spent a long portion of her life as a ranger guiding people across the plains in Tianxia. But, you know, she kind of got comfortable with the land, kind of grew to love the land, kind of grew to need it as much as it needed her. And slowly, you know, she found herself more druidic. Like, you know, she didn't wake up one day and say, "I'm a druid now." You know, fantasy worlds don't work like that. But now she has more druidy things, and she still has her rangery things, right? So that's what she got. She's got ancient elf to let her keep her ranger stuff. She's also using elven weapon proficiency as an elf. That way she always has access to her bow, which is her spell focus too, because I think that's so cool. Once we get access to the next ancestral feat, we're gonna take Elven Weapon Elegance. That way we can have critical hit specializations with the bow. Bow critical hit specializations are so cool. The arrow gets stuck in their foot or something, and then they can't move unless they pull the arrow out with like DC 10. Okay, sure. Like, who's gonna fail DC 10? That ain't the point. That ain't the point. The point is they have to waste an action doing it. And that's really strong. And they can roll an at one. So that's pretty cool. At second level, we're going to take... Oh, I didn't even mention. This is a Storm Order Druid. That way we have access to the lightning bolts right out the gate with the focus spell. And then at second level, we're going to take Order Explorer, Animal Order. That way we have a loyal steed that we can ride upon to shoot from atop. fourth level, we're getting mature animal companion because, I'm sorry, y'all. Look, if you don't take anything else away from this, please pay attention to this. If you're going to run around with an animal companion, you have to have a way to mitigate the fact that it's useless if you don't spend an action on it. When you take mature animal companion, you now have two options to get value out of the animal. You can spend one action for it to take two, or with this feat, from now on, you can spend zero actions and it can still take one. It is critical because the action economy, especially if you're going to be casting spells, is really rough when you have an animal companion. But that doesn't mean it can't work. It can actually work very, very well if you play your cards right. At sixth level, we're taking basic hunter's trick, because remember at first level we had ranger dedication. And this is going to give us access to hunted shot, which even further improves the action economy. Now, we can spend one action to shoot two arrows. I mean, granted, you're going to get regular multi-attack penalty, but that's fine. We don't mind. And what this lets you do now, thematically, is so cool. Because by level 6, right, Inagi can spend zero actions. The horse takes one action to run at horse speed. It's quite a bit, right? It's faster than she could go. She spends two actions to cast Electric Arc, and she spends one action to cast Hunted Shot. So now she has shot two arrows and dealt lightning damage to two targets. Boom. Thematically, she just shot two people with lightning arrows. You know? That's cool. That's what I want out of this. That's what I wanted. At 8th level, we're taking Incredible Companion, because you would be surprised how much damage an incredible horse can do to a foe. And at 10th level, we're going with Advanced Hunter's Trick, just to get access to Far Shot, because the Mongolians didn't use longbows, you know? They used, like, recurve shortbows. So, we're going to use a recurve shortbow, and we're now going to shoot out to 60 feet. What's the range on a shortbow? It's not 30 60. Feet. What is it?
Yeah.
We're going to shoot out to 120 feet without penalty. All of our spells are going to be buff spells for the horse, or they're going to be windy spells, or they're going to be electric spells, and I'm not going to take anything else. But, you know what we don't have featured here? A shifter. But that doesn't mean we can't shift into some questions from our users from patron Andrew Mullen. How can I effectively use an animal companion?
Well, as Lauren was saying, the big thing to do is make sure you take feats that make your animal companion scale up in strength. Mature animal companion, incredible animal companion will help out with that, partially because you want your animal companion to remain competitive in terms of attack and damage and stuff as time goes on. And, you know, just they can get lots of cool stuff. An effective way is basically how Lauren was explaining, was providing buffs via your own spells. If the Magic Fang spell helps out at early levels for that, your animal companion is, I guess, depending on how lenient your GM is, pretty versatile in terms of like how they can get around the battlefield. I personally am more lenient and let my players decide the exact path that the animal companion travels, as long as it's, you know, properly using its speed and striding correctly, so it can go in a circle to flank and stuff like that. So it's a second player character in some senses sometimes that you can use to really help out in terms of the battlefield control and flanking and things like that.
The only things I have to add, in addition to what Luis has said and what we've already said earlier, make sure you're being very mindful about the action economy before you get an animal companion. Have a plan for how you're going to deal with the action economy of the animal companion. You have to do it, otherwise it'll cripple you, or you'll be dedicating a lot of investment to a whole portion of your character that you're not even going to use just because you don't have the actions for it. The other thing, after fourth level, or after you get to a mature animal companion, don't even think about using Magic Fang. That spell has expired. You can't cast it on a mature companion because they do too much damage with their normal attacks. Look it up. Go look. I bet you're thinking Lauren's wrong on this one. That ain't how that spell works. Go look it up. It's the worst.
Next question here from user Lava Being asks, besides their focus in nature, in what other less obvious ways are druids different from other magic users?
I'll give you a big one up front, and it is less obvious, so still true to your question, Mr. Lava Being, or Miss Lava Being, I can't know. Shield block. You get shield block right out the gate, right? Like, your sorcerer doesn't come out the gate being ready to go into melee and, like, block a mallet from an ogre, right? Druid can do that. Druid walks up front and says, I'll just block that. Yeah. Shocking grass, baby. That's what you get. Yeah. Druids are different than other magic users in that you can be more tanky right up front. It's not hard to get into that. You don't have to archetype into fighter, you know? You don't have to do those kinds of things. Druid just already does it.
Yeah, that's really the big thing I was going to say as well. Combat focus is something that you can go with if you're a druid. Clerics are the only other class I can think of that have a decent time at being combat focused, depending on your doctrine for that. But beyond that, I mean, so much of the druid is based on the primal spell list. It's kind of hard to see beyond what the nature is in druids. I would say that possibly you could argue that, like, the way that they solve problems, no, that's just more nature. It's like, well, I solve problems differently. I transform into this animal and stuff. So yeah, there's not much else other than the nature, but I mean, that's really the druid's shtick is nature.
From patron Wilge, what's the best way to commune with nature without forcing your GM to have a complete logistical meltdown as they attempt to somehow count every creature within 9 miles?
Before we look at commune with nature, let's look at commune, because commune with nature says it works as commune, except that you talk to a primal spirit of nature to tell you about stuff around here. And for the most part, you are asking yes or no questions. And yes or no questions, unless they get very specific, won't be asking you things like, is the poison arrow frog here in this forest? You can say yes or no, but, like, beyond that, you can just ask. You're more likely to get questions like, are there dangerous predators in this area? Yes. Or are there rivers and lakes nearby? Yes. No. Yeah, stuff like that. You don't really need to know all the specifics about everything in the area for that, because the nature of the commune and commune with nature rituals, don't worry about the details. Yes or no questions can't get bogged up in the details unless your players are being very particular, because they need a very particular answer. And even with a critical success, they only get a few words of clarity. Are there dangerous predators around here? Yes, there is a pack of wolves, or there is a dinosaur stomping around. That's about the most that they get there. So you don't really need to worry about that. It's just, you'd get as much information from, like, reading a one paragraph entry about what's this forest like, or what's the river here like, and probably be able to make up most of that on your own. So I don't think it's too much of a concern. So feel free to commune with nature if you want, if your GM has given you access to that.
I agree with you, Luis. Yes or no questions really make it simple and pretty user-friendly for a GM. But I'll say, if you're really worried about it, or if your GM's really worried about it, just give them, like, a week's notice. Be like, hey, I'm going to be able to cast Commune with Nature now that I've leveled up. I'm probably going to be asking some questions about the Toothwood Forest, you know? That way, you know, if they want, they can prepare some notes about it.
All right, our next question from user Nate Wright asks, I adore the flavor of the Leshy Familiar, but its low defense and lack of offense makes it less appealing to actually use in combat. What are some tactical advantages that would let me get a return on the feat investment for picking up a familiar?
So, I never pick up familiars, but that's not because I don't think they're useful. I just don't enjoy the flavor of it myself. I would rather have, like, the animal companion who can get up front and just start mauling people. But what you can do with the familiar, ooh, you know, maybe if I made like an arcane type of rogue, that would be really interesting. Because what the familiar's advantage is that it's not stupid. That's the advantage, right? Like, it still has the minion trait, so you command it with one action, and it does two actions of thing. But you can say, hey, get into my pack and grab that block of cheese. You know, a familiar can do that. You can say, hey, stay right here on this crossbow and reload it for me. Okay, now what's interesting about that, heavy crossbow, reload takes two actions. Unless your familiar is doing it for you, now you got reload one. That's what's fun about the familiar, is you can do sneaky things because it's smart enough to know what you're saying.
If you came in from first edition Pathfinder, the familiar in 1E had stats that kind of suggested that there's a possibility for using them in combat, and that's a mindset you might just have to learn to drop when you're playing in 2E. If you want an animal to fight for you, it is not a familiar, it is an animal companion, full stop. The design of the game is such that familiars are here to support you and support your allies, but they don't get into combat. They specifically called out, I think, in the latest errata that familiars can't attack, because they want to make sure people are clear on that. Familiars aren't to be used to go and fight in combat. You can use them in combat to do things like Lauren said. You can maybe use them to help you out with grabbing an item from your pack or reloading, or as I did earlier, have them deliver a spell for you. But they're there for versatility. They're there for utility. They are not there for combat ability. In fact, familiars are probably best used outside of combat to take advantage of their things like their swim speed or their dark vision or being able to fly and talk with other animals of their type that are great for exploration. Those are not combat abilities. The closest you get to combat abilities are the master abilities that help you out in combat sometimes, depending on how you use them. But for the most part, they are utility options more so than any kind of combat effectiveness.
Think about it like this, right? You know what a barbarian does. It goes into combat and it fights stuff, right? That's your animal companion. But you do know what a support bard does. Nobody's like, hey, support bard, how come you're not up front swinging an axe? You know, they know what you do. You're going to support indirectly as a support bard. That's your familiar. That's what they're going to do. They're going to support you indirectly, and that has a use too. From Patron Dom, are there any druid orders that you would like to see in future products, official or third party, or that you think are just a glaring omission?
Yeah, I'm very surprised that there's only still the four orders at the moment. I expected APG to have them, and this is coming from someone who works at Paizo and could have looked at the files at any time to see what was coming. I wanted to keep some surprises for the APG, and there weren't any druid orders, so I'm hoping that we can see something that is more rock or like mountain. You know, there's more to nature than just plants and animals. There is all the minerals and stuff that exist, and some kind of rock themed druid order would be pretty cool. Maybe it's kind of an equivalent to like an earthbender style where you can shape rocks and stuff and throw rocks around and stuff. That'd be cool. And then there should be, I feel, something that is more focused on the bad stuff that nature has with it. There is like the storm order has kind of a natural disaster feel, but maybe some other natural disaster feels, or even like a blight feel, like there's plagues and stuff that happen naturally. Are there druids for that? That'd be great for evil druids in particular.
They could live in swamplands, you know?
Yeah.
I'm pretty frustrated that you took the whole, like, geomancy from me. Definitely.
Sorry.
I definitely wanted to have, like, the Order Tectonic or something, you know? But no, that's fine. You can have it. What about some, you know, what about some other aspects of nature that are, you know, less common? What about, like, a space druid? You know? Like, that's technically the natural world, yeah. You know?
I just realized that we have a sky druid in the form of the storm druid, but we don't have any water or ocean one related, so that feels like an obvious niche to fill.
Is it though? Because what's in the ocean? Plants, animals.
Yeah, but the
storms.
But Gosrae, the god of nature, is both the air and the sea. So like the brutality of waves and typhoons and stuff like that.
Yeah. What would it be though? You know, we've got storm order. Well, would it be like whirlpool order?
Yeah, it could be the
ocean order.
The ocean order.
Ocean order. Yeah. Then you could get like these salty old sea druids who go on your boat and make sure you don't get scurvy.
Exactly.
That'd be cool.
And I guess you could maybe even do something like a day order and a night order too.
We could have day man, fighter of the night man. Oh, I love it. Folks, that's all we have for you today. Make sure to check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection, because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.
We don't waste time. We're pretty good at not wasting time. I feel like we're pretty efficient. We get on, you know. I get to say hey to my buddy, but we also then get to work, you know?
Get to work. Get to talk.
We get to work.
Get to being legendary.
Yeah.